Alright guys, welcome to our first installment of our podcast, Three Dudes News. We're out here on a nice summer evening on the porch, and I'm Ben, and we're going to basically discuss news topics and banter back and forth on how we feel about it and how it might affect this generation. I'm here with Philip.
Greetings, everyone.
And Josh.
Hello.
Just to give you a little bit of background, we've been friends for a very long time, and we think that we can express different views on news stories and add a little bit of comedy in there and make it appealing to some of y'all. I'm just going to jump right into the first news story we got. Basically, NASA is advising the Chilean miners that are stuck down in Chile, and I got this story off of AOLnews.com, and the headline reads, NASA advice, no booze or smokes for trapped miners. They haven't seen daylight, family, or friends in 27 days, it's actually 37 days now, and now NASA doctors say that the 33 men trapped at the mine in northern Chile must learn to live without two of their favorite vices, cigarettes and alcohol. In a phone conversation with President Sebastián Piñera last week, the miners, who will be trapped for the next 2 to 4 months, asked for a little glass of wine to mark Chile's September 18th Independence Day, according to the Los Angeles Times. However, at the news conference Tuesday, NASA officials, who are using their astronaut training experience to help the miners stay mentally and physically fit during their confinement, said that rescuers wouldn't be shipping crates of booze into the mine anytime soon. First off, I'd like to address the cigarette aspect of this news story. Cigarettes in a closed area are not a good idea.
Especially in a mine shaft. I think that would be a horrible, horrible idea.
I see death coming if they went with that.
Yes. But they have sent down their nicotine patches and nicotine gum, which I can understand that. That's pretty good. But the wine, I think they should attempt to send wine down there because it's their freaking Independence Day. And if I was trapped in a mine on July 4th, not only is that my birthday, but I would want fireworks down there, much less some beer.
Not quite sure how fireworks work out.
That's a joke. Trapped
in a mine, but
like some dogs, like some hot dogs, maybe some burgers.
But I mean, I kind of see what NASA's saying here. You know, you don't want to get your confined miners absolutely drunk the whole time they stay down there. But I mean, you want to give them the creature comforts of home. It explains later on in the news story that they want to keep some semblance of reality while they're down there. And I think a good step towards that would be to send a bottle of wine down there for their Independence Day.
I kind of agree with that statement as well. I mean, if I was down there and I was celebrating my independence, I'd definitely like to have something. You know, something that kind of reminds me of the times that I've had before in my past with the same situation, the same day. So I think it would be a good idea for them to just maybe send down the wine. But I'm not, you know, there are other concerns that you would have with people drinking in an enclosed environment.
That's a great point, because in the news story it says the miners are estimated to have lost 22 pounds during the 17 days they spent underground. Now, with loss of weight, you know, that brings your alcohol tolerance way down. And so, you know, maybe they're thinking that if we do send this wine down there, it'll affect their health in varying degrees.
That's a very good possibility. So I agree with you, Ben. I think that they should send some wine down there. You know, I mean, they are monitoring their condition very, very in depth
Yes.
But if something were to happen, you know, it wouldn't be very easy for them to handle it.
Yes, poo on you.
How do you feel about it, Josh?
Well, I'm thinking a little one, maybe controlled, like one small bottle, like a shot glass or something.
But you're talking 33 men here.
Right, well, I mean, one shot glass per person, not like for everybody.
Okay.
So that way you get some taste of wine like you know, you normally would, and it shouldn't really affect them physically.
Well, I don't know. I think they should send, you know, whatever the miners want down there, because they're going to be trapped down there for a long time. And if the miners want wine, the miners should be able to get wine.
Yeah.
But that is my news story. Next is going to be Philip. What do you got?
Okay. I was looking on the CNN.com. Looking through the health section. I found this story where they're talking about magic mushrooms, an ingredient, may ease the end-of-life anxiety. Terminally ill cancer patients struggling with anxiety may get some relief from a guided trip on the hallucinogenic drug psilocybin, a new study suggests. The study included 12 patients who took a small dose of psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, while under the supervised eyes of training therapists. In a separate session, the participants took a placebo pill, which had little effect on their symptoms. By contrast, 1 to 3 months after taking psilocybin, the patients recorded feeling less anxious and their overall mood had improved. By the six-month mark, the group's average score on a common scale used to measure depression had declined by 30%, according to the study, which was published in the Archives of General Psychiatry. So what do you guys think of that?
Well, how do you feel about it?
I think it's a good idea. I think it's a very good idea, because these people are probably going to die. And if I'm
going
to
die... Might as well go out with a bang, huh?
Right.
Well, if you go out with a bang, just driving a Corvette over a cliff or something.
Well, I agree that the bang should not be a Corvette landing at the bottom of a cliff. But see, here's the thing.
No, it should explode off the cliff.
Here's the thing. This is a controlled environment, right? These people are in hospitals.
Yeah.
So they're controlling every aspect of this deal. And it's helping these people feel better and less anxious about dying. That's a fear that I believe all of us here can get behind.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, but, yeah.
Well, some of us aren't afraid of dying, but, you know, I think it's a great idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't think that there are better ways to control anxiety besides taking magic mushrooms? I mean, you got all kinds of prescription medication out there for anxiety and depression that work fine right now.
Well, there are,
yep.
But this one, this is a mushroom, man. You're not going through a pharmaceutical company and doing all kinds of research on it, and you don't have to pay for the research.
Good point.
To pay for the end product.
Good point.
Right?
I mean, it's something that occurs naturally.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of times pharmaceuticals take what's natural and patent it anyway.
Well, that's true. But then you pay them for the research patenting. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some research that we're paying for behind this. But these are mushrooms, man. These things grow like crazy.
Yeah. You know, and I wouldn't mind, you know, just going on a wild, wild trip on my deathbed.
I don't know about this. That'll be weird, yes.
Well, another aspect of that is if you're going to die and you've never done that before.
Of course not.
They're taking this simple one single ingredient that actually does it and making you trip balls.
Have you died before?
Mean, right there before you die. No.
Okay.
Well, I will say, based on experience with this substance, that you don't necessarily get a good sensation every time. You know, it's similar to acid. You know, you can go on a bad trip, and that might be detrimental to people who are dying.
Yeah, that could be pretty bad. I'm thinking about it, I'm dying. Oh yeah. My god!
It could exaggerate those feelings of there's nothing that I can do about my death.
Or it could cause them to go
basically
crazy.
Be haunted by your own death.
They may trip so bad they may attack somebody.
That's true. But it is an average score and a decline on this
true.
Particular depression scale.
Yep, true.
So I believe that's that's that.
What I think is interesting about this study is they say, here it says right from the story, during the psilocybin sessions, which lasted 6 hours, the patients lay on a couch and listened to music through headphones. Like, I love music. I listen to music all the time, and it relaxes me. It somewhat relieves my anxiety. So, do you think that that's a valid experiment to have music incorporated into the experiment?
As long as they have it across the study, each case, and it's the same type of music across everything, it should be fine.
But see, here's the thing about music. Music is a personal taste, right? So you're leading a trip based on a single person's...
Yeah.
A single person's personal preference, which may not be the same for everyone.
Exactly.
Yep.
See, if I'm tripping, I could be listening to Mozart, because I kind of like that kind of shit. And it might could lead me down one road, while it leads Ben, like, he thinks a piano is going to eat him, because that's
Or a refrigerator with a panther?
Yeah, it could be a refrigerator panther.
I do have piano phobia.
Yeah, well, a lot of us
That's
do.
Pretty bad.
So
that's a joke.
We got it. Well, as a study, I think it's pretty good.
Well, I mean, I understand your logic behind it. If they do keep, you know, all subjects the same music and the same time, but with what Philip said, you know, people react differently to different musics. So would you want to put... It doesn't say what type of music.
Right.
Or if the patients chose the music. I'm assuming that the patients had their own music.
Yeah. But if you remember from previous research that certain types of music, regardless of what it is, if it has the right pattern on it, can actually influence the mind to a certain level.
Yes.
So it could just do a basic series of notes. A right pattern, and it's going to affect the field pretty much all the same.
So in closing on this particular story, I think we need to know more.
Yes.
Definitely. So in depth, we need to know more information on this particular story to get a proper discussion going.
Yes, brain scans, MRIs, all that while things happen.
Right. So, on to the next story from Mr. Josh over there.
Oh, yes, yes.
Hear what he has to say.
All right, this one's about ACTA. If you don't know, ACTA is an agreement across various countries about copyright.
Yes, thank you. I did not know what ACTA was.
Okay, that's good. Good. Glad you know. Learning is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
Yes, G.I. Joe. Well, what's been going on with ACTA, and the reason why most of you don't know about it, is because it's behind closed doors. The U.S. government is actually fronting most of the agreements, committee conferences, and... Well, it's based with copyright. Some countries want a three-strike rule on their ISPs, where if you're pirating any type of software, music, books, which technically can't be done digitally.
Any type of intellectual property
that
can be copied digitally.
Yeah.
They're trying to three-strike it.
Yeah, that is true. And the thing is, being behind closed doors means that none of the public have any say in it whatsoever.
Or any knowledge that it exists. Yes.
So once it's agreed upon, nobody will know about it until it happens to somebody. Then like, oh, we're slapping you with this ACTA agreement here, and you are now under arrest, and you no longer have access to the internet whatsoever.
Ever. Again.
Yes.
And this is a multinational agreement here. So if we're talking about, you know, if we get a deal going on and everyone agrees to the same thing, what's going to happen is if I lose internet in Sweden and I move to the United States... Well, you know, Sweden's not going to be part of this. But if I move to the United States and I have my three strikes, I'm never going to have internet again.
Yep.
Any of those countries that are part of this agreement, I won't have internet again.
Now, like, what would be an example of a situation to where this would take effect? Like, what would I have to do to get punished under this ACTA thing?
Well, let's see. This is a very simple one, all right? This is one aspect of it, is that if you are transferring goods across the border, and you happen to have pirated goods on board your truck or whatever, that you get punished for it. Basically, a fine, imprisonment, basically anything that they decide to agree upon in that situation. Now, in terms of internet, you'll have, did they go with the three-strike rule? And they get captured the first time? It's like, okay, it's like, hey, it's like you screwed up, right?
Uh-huh.
You got two more. If it happens two more times, you lose everything.
Okay, but I don't know. I guess I just don't understand, like, what I have to do on the internet to cause this.
Okay. Well, the main aspect of it is, like, you download some music, right?
Yes.
And let's say you download it illegally, in this case, like, from an illegal source. And they grab your IP, and then they take you to court or send you a notice saying strike one.
Okay.
Now, let's say the next time they give you a notice, you didn't download anything, right? Your neighbor downloaded it on your Wi-Fi router. Broken?
Yes.
Because you didn't, you know, lock down your router that time, or they broke your password or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, strike two. And then it's like, well, how do I have this happen? What happened? Who did it? So, and you're just thinking, okay, what happened? Later, that same neighbor of yours downloaded something else. This time, a movie. A big blockbuster movie.
Or let's say even at the same time, they were downloading these two things, and you get two notices at independent times. So the Act of Commission, because it's probably what it's going to be, gets a notice at two different times, even though the act was occurring at the same moment. Right? So we get a notice from Company A, let's say a record label, right? And they send you, bam, there's your second strike. They already got a notice coming from Movie Company B, and you get that, bam, that's your third strike. No more internet for you, sir.
Now, just so everybody knows, these documents have been leaked, and they're not official yet. So when they actually go official, we will know what the punishments are going to be regardless.
Okay, with that being said, you think that the reason why they're doing this under the public's eye, or out of the public's eye, is so there aren't people out there trying to get past the system before the system has even started?
In some cases, that's probably true, because once you know how they're going to look for everything and how they're going to punish people for it, you can make adjustments.
You know how to get around it.
Yeah. But also, with this being not in the public eye, the general public, that the general users of the internet and the people, general shippers for goods and everything, won't know anything about it. So let's say you're a supplier, all right, is pirating goods, like Gucci bags or something. And you don't know that. You don't know anything about that. You just know you're getting Gucci bags from this person.
Yeah.
All right? And they don't catch the supplier. They catch you. They catch your company with pirated goods.
Yeah.
So in that case, not actually knowing what's going on, you can't check your suppliers. You can't do a background check, see what they're doing.
Yeah. Do you think once they enact this, if they do, that they will come public with it?
Well, that's hard to say.
And say, well, okay, now we're going to enforce this, and here are the, you know, here's what will happen to you if you break these rules.
Well, that's hard to say, because based on what I remember from the U.S. government's past secret enactments, you don't know about it until somebody's been arrested or fined, or in this case, caught.
Yes. And well, then, that's going to require a lot of enforcement, and it's going to affect a lot of people, I think.
And if I remember correctly, this is going to be under the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security's role.
Wow.
So, in that case, it's probably, you pirate something, you're a terrorist.
Yeah.
That's how they're going to look at it.
It's just Big Brother, you know, working itself upon us.
Yep. So,
we all seem to be relatively in agreement as to that being a horrible thing that can happen.
Well, I mean,
without actually knowing what's actually happening, it's hard. We can only speculate. And
well, without us knowing what's happening, there's no way for us to interject our opposition.
True.
Exactly.
Right? So that helps them get it passed,
yep,
for one thing, because there's no one screaming and beating down their door saying, hey, I don't want this shit.
Except the European Parliament. They've decided that it's non-democratic, so they're not going to agree with it.
Well, do you think that I think that the internet should be somewhat regulated in the fact that there are a lot of child molesters out there that molest kids through the internet. Would this be under that type of regulation?
No, this is for copyright only.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah. So, what you the point that you just made to me is basically that we have more harsh punishment for
copyright infringers
than we do for pedophiles.
Yes.
On the internet, who are
sure,
using,
Mr. England,
using the internet to rape small children. I think that's a horrible, horrible thing.
Yeah. There needs to be steps made to regulate the internet in that facet other than pirating.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love the lobbyists in Washington. RIAA, MIA, the Mafia. It's called the Mafia.
Let's call it the Mafia. The MPAA, RIAA, Mafia.
Yes. Oh, they're all up in the government.
All up in it.
All right. So, shall we carry on?
Yes. We will continue.
All right. I found this news story on abclocal.com. It comes from San Francisco, a place far away from here. But it kind of hit home with me, not because I have kids, but because kids don't need to be doing this kind of stuff. The headline reads, "Boy shot after finding shotgun under parent's bed." A 6-year-old boy was shot in Salinas apartment Tuesday evening and remained at the Bay Area Hospital in serious condition Wednesday night. Officers responded to reports of a shooting victim in an apartment complex about 5 p.m. Tuesday and found a child suffering from a gunshot wound to the abdomen. The boy was transported to a nearby hospital and was later flown by a medical helicopter to a Bay Area hospital, where he remained in serious condition following surgery as of 4:30 Wednesday night. When looking underneath his parents' bed Tuesday evening, the young boy found a 12-gauge shotgun. His 12-year-old brother came across the boy and the gun and tried to take it away from him, but the gun was discharged, accidentally shooting the younger boy, police said. The two boys were the only people home at the time of the shooting. Police were still investigating where the boy's parents were at the time. This just seems to be happening daily almost now, with children finding their parents' weapons and either thinking that it's a toy or thinking that it's something fun to play with, and accidentally, you know, shooting another person or damaging property, and I'm fed up with it. I think the parents should be held accountable for this, strictly accountable for this, instead of, later on in the news story, it says the parents could possibly face charges for improper storage of a firearm. Not a felony. I mean, you can't spend jail time for storing your firearm improperly. How do y'all feel about it?
That's a crock of shit, honestly.
Well, sorry for the dog that was out there in the back. So.
I think improperly storing a firearm is a simple slap on the wrist that is just absolutely ludicrous. Also, one of the things that I have a major problem with in this story is that police are investigating where the boy's parents were at the time. Investigating where they were? Did they not know where they were?
Yes. I guess not. Maybe they were horribly drunk. Or maybe that was all the mushrooms that you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell? What are these parents doing with the 12 and a 6-year-old kid at home by themselves?
And storing their firearm underneath the bed loaded.
Yes, loaded. The part being loaded is horrible.
Yeah. And
it's begging for somebody to be shot.
Yeah. I've grown up with firearms my whole life. And my parents always told me that if you do find a firearm, do not touch it and go find an adult. Now, my parents, on the other hand, would store their firearms properly in a safe, away from the ammunition. They were never loaded. But this story just makes me sad because, I mean, the kid probably didn't know any better. I mean, he's freaking 6 years old. He probably thought it was a toy. And then maybe the 12-year-old was like, okay, he's playing with a gun. This is bad. Let me get it away from him. But the kid, the younger one, was like, hey, it's a toy. I'm going to play with it. You know how 6-year-old boys are.
Oh, absolutely. We were all there at some point in time.
Yes, I remember my 6-year-old years.
So should this be a gun regulation law? Or should it be more toward, like, child protection services?
I think we have enough regulations on firearms.
True.
I think everyone who goes to the proper legal channels should be allowed to own a firearm as long as they know how to properly store and maintain the damn thing. Because anyone who has half a freaking brain, even a quarter of a brain, knows that you don't have children and a loaded gun in the same house.
Yeah.
So I think this is more of a... I would think it would be more of a Department of Human Services type issue. I'm not sure these parents need to have kids if they don't even know where the hell they were when the kid got shot.
Yeah,
that is true. In this case, I'm going to say basically the parents should be punished a little harsher than normal.
Yes. Yes.
Mainly because they just were acting stupid.
And you think that their son being injured would be enough punishment. But obviously, they didn't take that into consideration when they put their shotgun underneath their bed.
Right. That's an after effect. And they may never do it again because their son got hurt and it was horrible.
They're traumatized for life.
And they're traumatized because they don't want to see their child die. But still, you got to think about these kind of things in the first place.
Yes.
That way this stuff doesn't happen.
Think ahead, people.
But that's all I have to say about that.
I think we're all pretty much in agreement that that story...
The parents are stupid.
Stupid.
Shoot off their foot.
Shoot off their foot with their own shotgun once their child gets out of...
So what do we got next?
That was just a joke, everybody.
Please don't do that.
Please don't.
Bad thing. Next, we got a nice story from news.cnet.com. This is about one of my favorite things in the world.
Oh, no.
Sony has halted sales of the PS3 Jailbreak.
Where?
Okay. Not in the United States now. We wouldn't be so dumb as to produce a device like that here.
Right.
Okay. Not so fast, PS3 jailbreakers. Sony has succeeded, at least down under, in temporarily halting pre-sales of a USB dongle that would allow PlayStation 3 owners to dump borrowed games onto the system's hard drive. Bad idea. A federal court in Australia on Thursday ordered electronics retailers in the country to stop sales and distribution of the dongle called PS3 Jailbreak, except for to Sony. Okay? Court documents indicate the injunction will remain in place until a hearing scheduled for Tuesday that could determine the permanent fate of the mod chip in Australia and have consequences for the device in other countries as well. So, here's this device that comes out on the market that finally does to the PS3 what everyone's been waiting for it to do. All these hackers out there. There's a wonderful spectrum of things for jailbreaking. The worst of which is
jailbreaking.
Pirating. Okay? I think we're all in agreement that pirating is a horrible thing to do. Piracy is terrible. It hurts developers. It hurts everyone because it drives the price of games up.
Does it really?
It does. It really does. Because if you're a developer and you spend $2 or $3 million or more, sometimes tens of millions of dollars to develop a game, and half of your market is pirated, then you lost, you may not even recoup the sales that you made from creating the game initially.
But let's take EA into account.
Okay.
So EA develops a game called Smash Monkey 2007, alright?
Smash Monkey 2007, okay, this is 2010, so it'd be a little bit old for them to develop something like that.
No, it's 2007, not a year, it's just a number.
Okay, 2007, it's just a random number.
Exactly.
That is the year of the monkey for the smashing, okay, continue.
Okay, yeah. So they produce this game, you send it out, and it gets pirated, alright?
Okay.
Do another game, roughly the same premise, same 3EA, it doesn't get pirated. Alright.
Do they come out at the same time?
No.
Because that's a factor as well.
No, they go out to two different areas of the world.
Okay, two completely different areas of the world.
One in Europe, one in the U.S.
Okay.
Okay?
Gotcha.
And one in Europe is pirated. Okay?
Right.
Like, 100% pirated.
Okay.
One in the U.S., not pirated.
Okay.
Alright. Sales are equal.
Technically. Technically, sales are equal.
Yes.
Okay, so you're asking what particularly would happen in this equation, or this happens?
No, I'm saying, when this happens... What does EA actually get out of it? One, the U.S. sales, and how do they distribute their money?
Okay.
Who actually receives a benefit from a non-pirated device?
Who receives a benefit?
Yes.
The developers of the console?
Yep.
Which would be Sony in this case.
Yes.
The game developers, EA.
The distributor.
The distributor.
Right. And based on that, what's the percentages?
Well, we don't know that.
We're not sure. But
pirating affects all of those.
Yeah.
Right. So, there's no distributor in piracy. There's no distributor getting a kickback.
Yep.
The developer doesn't get money for putting the game into the distributor's hands.
Right, but you do have the initial item that they get pirated.
So, you're arguing the fact that this is something that's good?
I am arguing the fact that the opposite of what you're saying, basically. I'm just
saying you're arguing that piracy is not bad.
I'm saying essentially that.
Well, I mean, we all do it.
Yeah.
To some degree, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I mean, when was the last time you went out and bought a CD?
When was the last? Well, I have Napster, and I buy stuff off Napster most of the time.
Yeah.
Digitally.
Digitally, right?
Yes.
But now, however, when I have that, I will make as many copies of that freaking MP3 as I want.
Which you should be able.
Which I should be able to, right?
As long as you're not distributing those.
There might be some changes to that later on.
Well, you know, we'll see about that. But the main thing that I am interested in this device is Homebrew.
Yeah.
And if anyone doesn't know what Homebrew is basically code that is not signed by the developer of the console, right? So somebody writes a game for the PlayStation 3, but doesn't want to go through all the channels of having to go talk to Sony about it, you know, and then go to a distributor. They just put it out online. They want to put it out there free, and you can download it, and you put it on the console, and it runs.
Well, that's what I think is good about this specific device. And in the story, it reads, the PS3 runs the software on the PS jailbreak when the dongle is inserted in the console's USB port and booted. Besides the ability to copy and play games from the hard drive, the jailbreak is said to allow non-Sony approved software, including Homebrew apps, to run. Even online gaming is supported. I mean, that kind of, it drives people to create their own games. And I don't know how to do that, but it's interesting to me that somebody can make their own app or their own game, you know, at home and run it on the PS3, which is a great console to play games on.
One of the amazing things about that is that even online gaming is supported. So if somebody wanted to create, say, a Super Nintendo emulator, right?
Yes.
You got those great classic four-player games on Super Nintendo, like Super Bomberman 4, right? You
right.
could technically write an emulator that goes online, and you could play with four people, or three other people,
right.
online.
Around the world.
And where did you get the game?
Well, you know, that's one of those things.
Exactly.
I'm just saying, if I have Super Bomberman 4, like the actual Super Nintendo cartridge in my pocket, and all those other three people do, then they should be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So,
this is awesome hardware. I like it. You know, it's mainly because it opens up the box.
Right.
Okay? You own the box, you should do whatever you want with the box.
Right. If you own the box should be open.
Yeah.
That's pretty much
But you think that you should be able to rent a game from Blockbuster one time and then have it forever?
I think you should be able to get physical media, right? And actually be able to, in this case, when you rent it, have the option to license it. In this sense, to where you kind of like own it.
Okay, that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother thing. I'm going to copy a game from Blockbuster to my hard drive
right.
that I don't actually own. Should that happen?
Well, you're not really, theoretically.
Hypothetically, he's going to copy a game from Blockbuster.
Right,
okay?
Hypothetically. No, I'm not going to do that. I don't use Blockbuster for anything.
Sorry, I didn't mean theoretically. That's what I meant. Yeah. Well, that word.
That word.
Hyperbole.
Hyperbole, anyway. So
this
yeah.
honey whiskey's kind of getting to me.
Yes, that is not one thing. Are you going to distribute it, or are you just going to keep it for yourself?
I'm going to keep it for myself.
So that is, in the sense of the current society and laws, that is called stealing.
Yes, because the game was not yours to begin with.
And not only that, I circumvented copy protection to take it.
Yes.
Which is against the DMCA.
Yes.
So,
which is screwed up.
So we all agree that there's good and bad in this particular.
I mean, it has potential for both sides. You can make some awesome stuff out of it, or you can cause some mass chaos with it. It's like a hammer. Or a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tool. That's all it is.
Well, yeah, and what you do with that tool is what defines the situation.
Yes.
Like if you use a hammer to, say, build a house.
Yep.
That's
perfectly
good.
Fun. Yeah, no, you created something awesome.
But if you use that hammer to beat someone in the head,
yeah, that's called murder.
Yes,
that is called murder.
That's a great analogy.
I think we all agree that
yes.
beating someone over the head with a hammer is murder.
Yes, it definitely is.
I think that would classify as murder. Yes.
Oh, this reminds me of TiVo and a ham sandwich.
TiVo and a ham sandwich.
What?
Well, you can go into TiVo and a ham sandwich after iTunes.
Yes, I'll
so
do
let's
that.
Go ahead and hear about this one.
Okay,
Josh.
iTunes. All right. Okay, songs purchased on iTunes are licensed and not owned. Now this...
That's what the court says.
Yes, that is what the court says. Now, this... The whole case in this situation was because of artists trying to get their percentage for their music, right?
Okay.
So, they can make more money by licensing their music than they can do by selling physical media, or actually selling their media, period.
So
yes. So, the courts actually... Okay, got that. Good? Alright. So the courts decided that licensing iTunes music... iTunes music is actually licensed and not actually purchased. All right.
That's what the court said.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm glad we rehashed that story.
Yeah, so to clear all that out of there, because there was some crazy stuff going on. There was a moth.
Okay.
All right.
So you're saying that if I download a song from iTunes and I pay money for it,
yes,
I'm merely licensing the privilege to have that digital media on my device and listen to it.
I'm confused.
Okay, well... Alright, you buy a CD, alright? You actually own that CD.
Yes.
You buy a song on iTunes. You don't technically own the song.
Correct.
Because they have an agreement on there saying that you are licensing it. It's a lot like Microsoft's Windows systems.
And is this an attempt to get the artist their money, or is this an attempt to control pirating? I don't quite understand the logistics behind this.
What they're trying to do is actually control the media. Or, well, in this case, the digital media.
Yes.
So that they can get more money off of it, or they can actually decide not to provide you with it at a later date.
So I could go into iTunes and buy an Eminem track.
Right.
And it's not really mine.
Nope.
And later on down the road, if iTunes decides that they don't want to carry this Eminem track, they can take it away from me.
Exactly.
That is wrong.
It's a lot like Amazon and their Kindle. Back when they were having the licensing trouble with that book. I can't remember what it
was
called anymore.
Was it 1984? Was that the book?
I think it may have been 1984.
It was something along the lines of that book. And they hadn't licensed it properly.
Yeah.
And since they had the back door in the Kindle, they could just go right in there and snatch it away from them.
Screw it up everybody's Kindles.
Yeah.
This one kid actually sued for it because he had his notes on it and it wiped them all out. So
will this affect the artist in any way?
It should provide them with more money.
Okay.
For the artist. Not necessarily the... I can't remember the name now. The
record company?
Yes, the record company.
Basically, what has happened is that record companies have gone in and said, the artists want more money. And Apple said, well, okay, the best way for us to get them more money is to not actually sell people the songs. Right? So if they want more money, it'll cost us and you less to actually sell someone the song. So we're just going to license it to them. And that frees up a crap ton of money. So now they're getting 50%. And it was more. It was less than 20% before. So this is going to help the artists a lot.
Well, I think this is good in a way because it does help the artists. Because if you look at music back before digital media, I mean, artists were raking in the dough. I mean,
before the
you would sell millions of albums if you were a good artist, and now you're lucky to sell 100,000 if you're a legitimate artist nowadays. And I think that this might be a step to try to get back to that.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I agree with you on that. It just needs to be ironed out.
I just don't see a reason why iTunes would pull your song from you.
Well, it's like, with Amazon, it's like, they don't see a reason why they'll pull a book from anybody either.
But an occasion came up where they had to, and they did.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Digital media is never going to take off completely unless we're actually going to own the crap that we're buying. I'm not going to buy stuff that I don't own.
Yeah.
I'm just not.
Yeah.
I will go to Amazon and buy that shit for 99 cents, the same that I'm going to pay on iTunes. I don't give a fuck what the artist is going to get.
That's just basic computer.
Why not?
No, I mean...
You want the artist to produce more stuff.
I'm the average consumer mind right here, okay?
Okay.
So, if I'm going to pay 99 cents for something that I'm going to own, I'm going to pay 99 cents for something that I'm going to license. Which one do you think I'm going to choose?
The one you own.
Right. The only people that are going to stick around with this are the Apple fanboys that have iPods and, you know, iPads and all that kind of stuff, where pretty much the only way that they can get the media on the device without jailbreaking it is to go through iTunes.
There's different ways to do that.
Well, that's what we know. Right.
Because I have an iPhone, even though I don't like it. But there's ways to get downloaded pirated media on there. I'm not going to express that because I don't do that.
Yes, we don't bad. Condone that, actually. We just...
Piracy is bad.
Okay?
Drugs are bad, children. Drugs are bad.
But being licensed, it limits your capability of what you want to do with the media, too. Yeah. If you own it, you can do essentially whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah. So, with this, you couldn't do with it whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with it.
If you enter into a licensed agreement, then basically it may say, well, all you can do is put it on your iPod.
Yep.
That's all you can do with it. You can't make a disc of it. You can't put it on CD and put it in your and jam out in your car.
Can't stick it on another MP3 player.
Yeah, just put it on an iPod and that's it. Otherwise, we're going to take it away.
Yep.
So.
Well, I think that covers that.
Yep.
I think that was a good session.
I think that was pretty good.
I think that was relatively good. I think we covered some good things.
Let's clarify the TiVo and a ham sandwich.
Okay. Go ahead. Let's explain the TiVo and the ham sandwich real quick.
Okay. TiVo has taken to court Dish Network over their DVR hardware. I was just confused by something. Don't worry about it. And... Well, basically, the hardware, all it's doing is recording video, and you can do playback, fast forward, all that. And the key point here is actually recording video and fast forward and rewind live video.
Okay. So basically, TiVo is saying that they
own it.
They are the only ones that can pause, rewind, fast forward. You can't fast forward a lot, technically live.
Yeah, but you go back and forth.
Go back and forth and, you know, play in time shift, basically.
Yes, time shift.
Live media. But here's the thing. I don't think TiVo was the first people to do that.
I believe it was Sony and the Betamax.
Yeah. Or the VCR, for that matter. I mean, so basically, TiVo and a ham sandwich is saying that TiVo is trying to patent a ham sandwich.
The process of making a ham sandwich.
Everyone knows how to make a damn ham sandwich, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to make a ham sandwich, I'm going to patent it. Okay, first, you get a slice of bread, all right? Any bread, just bread in general. Put the ham on it, you put the other slice of bread on top of it.
Voila.
Ham sandwich.
Ham
Nobody sandwich. Else can make it, only me.
So now I have to pay Josh $1 every time I want to make a damn ham sandwich.
Yep.
Just because I happen to like ham sandwiches. And Josh is going to be a rich man.
Yep.
Because he's patented the process of making a ham sandwich.
That's bullshit.
Exactly.
So I like whiskey.
When you put it that way, it's bullshit. So anyone out there supporting TiVo, tell them to go fuck themselves.
Yes.
Oh yeah, they make good hardware. It's just that I think they're
patenting the ability to do such things is kind of horseshit.
Yes.
So, I believe that's going to wrap it up for us here.
Yes. And I would like to suggest to anyone out there, try American Honey.
By Wild Turkey.
Yes, it's great stuff.
That is not an official ad.
It is not an ad. They are not sponsoring us. By the way, Wild Turkey, if you'd like to sponsor us, it would be you can contact us.
We might integrate that into our shows. Drink something different every time, and then do like a little spill on it at the end.
Exactly. Any type of beverage manufacturer.
That would mean that
except
Josh,
for Coke.
That would mean that Josh has to actually drink some.
I'll do that. All right.
Okay. All right. So he's on board for that.
Just not Coke.
Just
no
not Coke.
All right, guys. Bye.
Later.
Take it easy.
See you next week.